You're listening to the Voice of Russia in London with me, Daniel Sinner. The Square Mile, officially known as the City of London, is the centre of global finance. It holds around £9.4 trillion in banking assets from global institutes. But unlike anywhere else in the UK, the city has exclusive powers and privileges dating back to medieval times. It's so separate from the rest of the country that even the Queen cannot pay a visit without permission from the city to cross its borders. The corporation holds such power that they have a senior representative with a seat in the House of Commons who keeps an eye on all legislation passing through. The Remembrancer, as he is known, is the city's eyes in Parliament and its lobbyist. The city is the only place in the UK where businesses have a vote in local elections. It even has its own police force. And with finance as the UK's second largest industry after manufacturing, it holds sway at home as well as abroad. But is this an outdated set of privileges? And does the city wield too much political power and influence? Joining us for a discussion about the City of London is Dr. Lee Salter, a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of the West of England and co-producer of the Secret City film about the City of London. David Wickenden is a freelance investment banking business analyst working in the City of London. Professor Tony Travers is from the Department of Government at the London School of Economics. And Tim Groves is from Occupy London, a global movement fighting social injustice and corporate greed. Dr. Lee Salter, does the city have too much power and influence?
Undoubtedly. There's no local authority in the UK that has anywhere near as much power, not just in Britain and the British constitutional settlement, but globally. The Corporation of London, and it's quite well known, lobbies for banks in the financial sector internationally. You know, we've just seen the transaction tax implemented in Europe, in France, in Italy, and so on. It was resisted in the UK due to the special role that the finance sector has, which is protected by the corporation itself. And indeed, that's one of the reasons it's not democratic.
Because, but what's wrong with lobbying? Every business lobbies for its point of view. Why can't the City of London?
Because it's the difference between a sector lobbying and a political organisation lobbying, a local authority, if we're going to call it that. But, you know, I mean, the City of London, the Corporation of London has been referred to as a state within a state. So it's more than a local authority. And one of the problems with its role in lobbying is the secrecy that surrounds it. It's not an open institution. It has these elements of power, and it has these financial resources that it will not tell people about because it's an ancient corporate body and is not subject to public scrutiny.
Professor Tony Travers from the London School of Economics. The city does have a lot of power compared to anywhere else in the UK. Do you think it is too much power, though?
I'm not sure it has that much more power than many other institutions. It undoubtedly, because of its historical position and the way it functions, does have the capacity to lobby for things it wants and to argue for things. But actually, so do many, many other institutions. I mean, as I say, there are plenty of institutions that are powerful. And, you know, the whole question of who influences government and how is regularly on the table. And if you're not at the core of government, it's very difficult to work out who is influencing any decision. And I think, you know, to pick on the City of London is preposterous. There are dozens of other institutions that have great power.
Tim Groves, would you agree with what you just heard from Professor Travers?
Actually, no. Clearly, the City of London Corporation is a special institution, as we've already heard. It's a unique local authority in its structure. I would say it's actually a self-appointed lobbyist for business. The idea that the major decision makers in the major financial, and let's not just think financial, but also all the people who hang on to the financial coattails, stockbrokers, accountants, big law firms, the idea that the major decision makers are actually care anything about what's said in the deliberations of the City Corporation is frankly farcical. But of course, they're quite happy to take advantage of any support they can get, no matter how much of a sham it is.
David Wickenden, strong words there from Tim Groves. You work in the City of London. Do you agree?
I think there's definitely sort of a symbiotic relationship between the City of London and the financial institutions. But you know, the financial institutions are pretty fickle. If there's somewhere else that they consider as a better place to do business, they're quite willing to move. You know, like I think HSBC recently decided to move the headquarters to Hong Kong and stuff. And as I was saying earlier, they will move out to Canary Wharf or out of the City of London itself. So, but it's inevitably a bit of a back scratching thing, as with any corporation in any authority, any location.
Professor Tony Travers from the London School of Economics, we've heard about this layer of secrecy. Journalists have said how difficult it is to try and talk to and get any information out of the City of London. Do you think they are as transparent as they should be?
I mean, I think they're no more or no less transparent than many other institutions, actually. I mean, it's very difficult to get lots of information about British government. I mean, the UK government as a whole is notorious for being difficult to get stuff out of in secrecy. And if you take the transaction tax issue, yeah, I'm sure the City of London representing city businesses lobbied for it. But the idea that that's what made the difference is nonsense. That what made the difference is that George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, didn't like it. That's why it was done. I just think, you know, people who are at the top of British politics, they'll be lobbied by the city, they'll be lobbied by lots of other interests, as you say. But in the end, you know, George Osborne, David Cameron, the British Chancellor and Prime Minister will make their decisions. And I'm as near as you can get to 100% certain they'd have lobbied against the transaction tax, even if the city hadn't said a word. I mean, it is just what they believe.
Dr. Lee Salter, you're a co-producer of the Secret City film about the City of London. Can you give us some examples about how powerful the City of London is and what kind of influence it is wielding?
Yeah, I mean, to preface this with a little bit exasperated by what Tony has just said, that it's preposterous to pick on the City of London.
Well, I'm saying it's compared with lots of other institutions which are also powerful. I'm not saying the city doesn't lobby. What I'm saying is that choosing it and its influence above lots of other organisations that have extraordinary power to lobby government, it's just sort of choosing on one thing in order to attack it when there are lots of others. You can say there are other institutions shouldn't have as much power, but the truth is they do. And I'm just saying it's only one of a number of institutions that influence the way government makes its decisions.
But as a professor of government, you would say it's preposterous to investigate the power of a particular institution over
others.
I'm
not saying it's preposterous to investigate it. I'm saying it's preposterous to choose it and say it is uniquely different to everything else.
I don't think anyone said that. I mean, you know, you've mixed your words. You said on one hand that it's a local authority. And you said it's a good local authority, it does well in the city and so on and so forth. And then you start comparing it, and then you turn to talk about the city rather than the corporation.
I was talking about the City of London Corporation and its capacity to lobby.
And it's one of a number of institutions that
lobby.
Okay, but that's not the point. The point is it's a local authority that's lobbying on the behalf of a particular sector. Now, in the film, what we show is how this corporate body, which is supposed to be diverse and plural and represent all sorts of functional interests from the 16th century. And indeed, it was no coincidence that the city becomes the financial district, because Thomas Gresham and others go to Antwerp. They realise that Antwerp's not going to carry on as the financial centre. So that gets brought to London.
But okay. You're just arguing you wish history were different. You're saying is you wish history were different.
No, I'm saying if we want to properly understand how the corporation works, how it's got the power it's got today, we need to view it historically. And any artifact, any institution can only be understood historically. And if we look at the Corporation of London historically, we can see that over time, the livery companies, the aldermen and so on and so forth, all of these structures have effectively been taken over by a few institutions with very narrow interests. Now, if the Corporation of London were to be doing its job, it would be lobbying for the City of London and the various interests that should be there, but they're not there because they got emptied out over time. So now it's become a single interest lobby group that uses many, many hundreds of millions of pounds it has in these secret cash accounts. And indeed, it's not. You compared it to the other government bodies. Other government bodies are subject to the Freedom of Information Act. They're public institutions. The Corporation of London is not open to the Freedom of Information Act.
But is it legitimate for manufacturing industry representatives to lobby for manufacturing? They're private sector interests. They quite, in my view, entirely reasonably lobby for manufacturing interests in government to get tax policy changed and so on. Now, they're doing it privately. Now, the City of London, it actually is slightly more accessible than private sector lobbyists, in fairness.
A reminder that you're listening to The Voice of Russia in London with me, Daniel Sinner. Joining us for a discussion about the City of London is Dr. Lee Salter, a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of the West of England and co-producer of the Secret City film about the City of London. David Wickenden is an investment banking analyst working in the city. Professor Tony Travers is from the Department of Government at the London School of Economics, and Tim Groves is from Occupy London, a global movement fighting social injustice and corporate greed. Let's bring in Tim Groves.
Yeah, coming back to what Tony said just earlier, we're not talking about Bell Pottinger here. We're talking about a body of elected officials who control a really large amount of cash, a cash pile, income, disbursements, and they are simply not accountable. And those elected officials...
But they are elected. Surely that makes them accountable.
They are elected by a very undemocratic franchise. The City of London Corporation franchise is an abomination of democracy.
Why is it an abomination?
Because it's very unrepresentative. It's all in the public domain. It's all on a website if you want to look. It's split up into 25 wards. The size of the electorate in each ward varies vastly. It's split between resident votes and business votes. The distribution is undemocratic. It's supposed to be made more democratic by the Tony Blair's Act of 2002, when, of course, Tony Blair was just trying to honour one of his populist pledges. But, of course, it's a very weak act. That act is supposed to be subject to scrutiny by Parliament. I don't believe it's been scrutinised. If it has been scrutinised, they haven't done a very good job. There are very few residents, and they are not properly represented. The business vote is simply not democratically distributed through the businesses.
Let's bring in David Wickenden, freelance investment banking analyst who works in the City of London. David, it is very odd that businesses do get this vote in the City of London. What do you think about what you've just heard from Tim Groves?
Well, I was just considering that, and I was going to ask Tim how he would compare that with the Canary Wharf situation, where Canary Wharf's a private estate, a large private estate, which is completely devoid of any kind of democracy. And corporations go there, and they even have their own set of security guards who look like policemen, even wear the same sort of clothes as police. And very, very bizarre place to be. And I always made the analogy that it's a bit like a Soviet city over there in terms of, these big monolithic places. But going back to the City of London, I mean, it's hard one to call that. I mean, what would be the alternative? I mean, a place where it's majority of interests, institutions are business institutions, and it's not a residential area. How would it be more democratic in another way? I mean, would you give all the workers a vote or something, or would it be?
Well, let's put that question to Tim Groves.
Two questions there. The first one about how would I compare it with Canary Wharf? I wouldn't, because we're not comparing like with like. There you have a situation, a relationship between landlords and tenants.
Yeah.
The city. Well, we're talking about the City Corporation. I was talking about the franchise. So you've now morphed that into would I give more business votes? I mean, my point is I've made it several times now, is simply that the democracy should be better because it's at the moment non-existent, and that the finances of the City Corporation should be transparent and accountable, and they're not. For example, I'll give you an example. Let's not just talk woolly ideas. The City Corporation chipped in, I think it was £200 million for Crossrail, may have been £400 million, without due process. Where did they get that sort of money? Did Canary Wharf? You're not comparing like with like.
David, have you got any comments on what you've just heard from Tim?
Yeah, I would kind of agree that, yeah, democracy probably needs to be sorted out. But in terms of a local authority using some of its money to fund an initiative that's going to help transport within its area, I think that's quite reasonable. Mm. And, you know, in terms of comparing like for like, there are areas of the city that are becoming like Canary Wharf, like the area around Stock Exchange and St. Paul's. That's another little Canary Wharf area where it's, you go in there, it's private land, and, you know, I could see that eventually the city would just be like Canary Wharf, where the City of London Corporation would be just irrelevant, really. You just have that, like you said, the landlord-tenant situation.
Sure. Professor Tony Travers.
Well, I think, I mean, I rather agree, you know, the idea of attacking the City of London for investing in public transport is kind of sounds a bit bit odd, given that public transport is almost universally seen as a good thing. But let's, in fairness to those who are arguing against the city, you know, a Royal Commission memorably described the City of London Corporation, you know, in the terms that logic has its limits and the city lies outside them. And in a sense, it does. But then so does the House of Lords and so does the monarchy. And you have to remember that Britain has evolved institutions which often don't look at first glance classic models of democracy. And I'd be interested to hear what the other speakers think. You know, the city may be well worth a go in these terms, but what about the monarchy? I mean, that too. I don't want to broaden the programme out too much, but what about the monarchy? That has a lot of power.
We heard from Tim Groves before from Occupy London that the City of London is not democratic at all. They do have elections, but how democratic is it?
No, it certainly doesn't, in the way it's constructed, conform to the normal one-person, one-vote rule. That's for sure. It's an evolved history of that form of democracy over time. More of the vote in Britain used to look like this. And, of course, what's happened in the City of London is that as the franchise evolved, the City of London, by coincidence, became an almost purely business district. And that led governments, successive democratically elected governments, I might add, to leave these arrangements in place. These are the arrangements that Labour and Conservative governments have left in place over time. Now, you can argue with them that they got that wrong, but this is the product of democratic governments deciding to leave it that way.
Dr. Lee Salter.
Okay. I mean, you know, first off, you know, Tony's just said people against the city. If the Liberal Democrats call for proportional representation, they wouldn't be described as against Britain. Okay. You know, what we're doing, it's nothing to do with being against the city. It's being pro-city and thinking about how it can be reformed to make it better. Wouldn't it be wonderful if those hundreds of millions of pounds they've got stashed away in cash could be used to regenerate other parts of the city? And I don't mean the odd charitable bit and bob of investment here and there. You know, in order to, say, make one reform of the city, this 2002 Ward Elections Act that we've been talking about, when they initially proposed it, in fact, these things haven't been left in place by governments. The City of London Ward Elections Act is what's called a private act, okay, because the government doesn't tend to regulate the Corporation of London because it predates Parliament and that would cause some constitutional problems. It initially said we're going to distribute votes to businesses on the basis of the rateable value of property, i.e. the wealthier the business, the more votes it has. That was contested. OK. And one of the things that Maurice Glassman and William Taylor and others and John McDonald argued was, well, hold on, if you're talking about the City of London being populated by people working for these companies, then why not distribute the vote on the basis of the number of people working for a company? They eventually say yes. OK. And they come up with some convoluted mechanism to enact that. Right. Now, what we said was, OK, if you're going to distribute the vote on the basis of the number of people working there, you need to consult the people who work there. OK, because that's what as a local authority, it should be serving the people, the human beings who work there. Right. Now, we spent a day making the film, going around the City of London, speaking to city workers, OK, receptionists, financiers, IT people, and just asking simply, who did your business vote for? And they don't know. They didn't know they had a vote. They've got no idea of how the electoral system in the City of London works. Now, if they're supposed to be represented on the basis of these business votes, why aren't they being told about
it? There are a lot of people in the City of London. You can't expect that the handful of people or however many people that you spoke to, all of them would know.
But the point is, it was the duty of the companies to consult, to inform. Right. Now, if it's a duty of my university to inform me about health and safety procedures, which they do, they get into trouble if they don't. OK.
With respect, the duty was much more than that. The duty under the Act is that they produce a voters list which is representative of their
exactly.
entire workforce.
Yeah.
Professor Tony Travers, we just heard from Lee Salter that there's constitutional problems that might arise from the reform because the City of London existed before Parliament. Do they actually exist?
I mean, the City of London could be reformed tomorrow by Parliament if it chose to. I mean, like everything, UK Parliament is sovereign. It can do what it wants. It could abolish the city, reform it, do what it chooses to. Now, it's true the city had a charter, certainly from 1066, and privileges in some ways that go back beyond that, that's for sure. But, you know, it is up to our Parliament what they do with their power. So if they wanted to change it, they could change it.
Dr. Lee Salter, there's no constitutional crisis. Parliament's sovereign.
And Parliament, if it chose to, could execute every female in the country.
OK, we're not talking about that. We're talking about whether they can overrule the City of London.
That just makes the point. Parliament can do what it wants.
It can do what it wants, right? But it's not going to kill every female in the country, and it's not going to end the monarchy, and it's not going to make these certain constitutional reforms that will cause crises for its own basis of legitimacy. And also, when there's no will there to do so. And
so there is no constitutional crisis, then. The only crisis they're going to have is a backlash from the City of London.
I think that, you know, the point to bear in mind about the British Constitution is its constitutional conventionalism. So the convention is the basis of legitimacy. And as soon as you start tinkering around with the conventional basis of legitimacy, you threaten a constitutional crisis or constitutional problems. And that's really all I kind of need to say on that.
So it is possible to reform the powers of the City of London?
As it's possible for them to do anything as a sovereign body, but it won't do it because it would unravel a whole load of constitutional agreements.
Tim Groves.
There's an existing legislative duty to monitor the reforms which were brought in 2002, and they're simply not doing that job. But let me come back to this stuff about the good works that the City Corporation does. We mentioned Crossrail. Wonderful pat on the back. Thank you. They do lots of other good works too. Hampstead Heath, Epping Forest, Burnham Beaches, social housing out of borough. They have schools. They run Billingsgate Market. That's wonderful. We don't blame them for that, and it's wonderful that they do that. But the point I object to is that
Lord Mayor Parade.
This age of noblesse oblige is no longer appropriate in these days. The basic problem is they have pots of money. They're doing some good work with it. They're doing other stuff that we don't know about, property deals on the fringes of the city. Now, the problem is that it's just not public. It's not subject to public scrutiny. As was pointed out earlier, they're not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. They're not accountable. And the people who are controlling these funds are not democratically elected. Let me tell you one very brief true story. Stuart Fraser, at the time leader of the Court of Common Council, spoke in open forum, in a council meeting, in front of witnesses. And his words were in response to the Occupy movement's demand that they publish the accounts of the city cash account. His response was that it's like somebody coming along and landing a helicopter on my front lawn and demanding to see the details of my bank account. Doesn't that just say it all?
A reminder that you're listening to The Voice of Russia in London with me, Daniel Sinner. Joining us for a discussion about the City of London is Dr. Lee Salter, a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of the West of England and co-producer of the Secret City film about the City of London. David Wickenden is an investment banking analyst working in the city. Professor Tony Travers is from the Department of Government at the London School of Economics, and Tim Groves is from Occupy London, a global movement fighting social injustice and corporate greed. Professor Tony Travers, what do you think from what you just heard about Tim Groves about the transparency?
Well, I mean, the city as a local authority is subject to exactly the same rules as any other local authority, including for freedom of information. Of course, the city in the management of the finances that are held in trust, city cash, is different because that's like a trust. It's like any other trust. It's in the private sector. And so that is an argument about trust law, which undoubtedly you might want to take on. But the city as a local authority, which is what I was trying to ring fence at the beginning of this, is subject to the same rules as any other council.
There's been a lot of slating in this discussion of the City of London, but do you think that the financial sector there has the wider interests of the UK and the industrial base at its heart?
That's a very different question on a completely different issue, but it's a good one. And I think that recent times suggests probably not. I think that the banking sector has probably rather undermined its own reputation insofar as it had one. And they are going to have to make amends, both in terms of refocusing what banking does. And, you know, banks are necessary to lend money to allow the economy to function, but to refocus it on things in what you might call the real British economy rather than the rather more exotic stuff that they were doing in the international markets. And frankly, they're going to have to rebuild the trust of all their customers, big businesses, small businesses, private citizens, and the government who've had to bail them out. So there's a separate question of whether the banking industry and finance has got its ducks in a line, which they haven't, as compared with the future of the City of London as an institution. I mean, that's just across the world.
As we come to the end of this discussion, we've spoken about how some people think this is an outdated and ancient corporation. Should it now be reformed? Dr. Lee Salter.
One of the most interesting proposals for reforms that I've heard comes from now Lord Glassman, who argued that the City of London, you know, historically it's refused to incorporate the rest of London. His argument is, well, why not extend the rule of the Corporation of London over the entirety of London and have various livery companies represent functional representation for doctors and nurses and train drivers and bus drivers and so on and so forth, and actually give them a say in the running of government as banks and so on have a say in the running of the City of the London Corporation itself.
Professor Tony Travers.
I'm sure there are things about it that could be made more consistent with modern democracy and make its processes a little more open. I kind of get all of that. But, you know, should it be reformed? It's part of these odd things that the British Constitution throws up. You wouldn't design them from first principles, but the fact they've survived probably means they'll continue to survive. So it certainly wouldn't be top of my list of priorities for things that need to be done about Britain.
David Wickenden.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, the City of London, it's been around, what is it, almost 1,000 years or something, and it's refined itself over time to become the sort of efficient vehicle that it is at the moment. Yeah, perhaps it isn't perfect, but, you know, a lot of people don't think it's broken, so why fix it?
And finally, Tim Groves.
Yes, my opinion, an opinion I'm sure shared by most of my friends in the Occupy movement, is that it certainly should be reformed, but we have no confidence whatsoever in the present political and financial establishment to manage those reforms.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time for today's discussion about the City of London. Thank you to all of my guests, Dr. Lee Salter, a senior lecturer in journalism at the University of the West of England and co-producer of the Secret City film about the City of London. David Wickenden is an investment banking business analyst working in the City of London. Professor Tony Travers is from the Department of Government at the London School of Economics. And Tim Groves is from Occupy London, a global movement fighting social injustice and corporate greed.